Tonight on many PBS television stations, a documentary premieres called Oprah's Roots. As the name suggests, it's an exploration of Oprah Winfrey's family history, all the way back to Africa. Historian and scholar Henry Louis Gates Jr. narrates the program and tells how he and his team used genealogical records and DNA to fill in the blanks of a story that many African Americans have been slow to come to terms with.
When you were growing up, did your family ever talk about these people?
Absolutely, zero not. You know this, when you grow up poor and on welfare, that you don't have time to think about what came before.
That's true.
you just like, can I get the light bill paid? And
the insurance
man's at the door, tell him I'm not home.
But we were embarrassed about slavery. That's why it's so extraordinary that our generation is embracing our slave heritage.
Yeah.
And being proud of it.
Tonight's special grows out of Professor Gates' four-part series, African American Lives, which premiered last year, and it's part of a larger mission on the part to encourage African Americans to learn about their family history. If you've done some of that yourself, call and tell us what you've learned and how you learned it. Our number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Henry Louis Gates joins us now from our bureau in New York. He heads Harvard's African and African American Studies program. He's also the author of the companion book to tonight's program called Finding Oprah's Roots, Finding Your Own. And Professor Gates, it's nice to have you on the program today.
It's nice to be back on your program.
So why Oprah?
Well, Oprah, because first of all, I wanted to know how Oprah Gail Winfrey, a poor black girl from Mississippi, became Oprah. I mean, Oprah is sui generis. Oprah, there's never been anyone like her. And I wanted to see if there was any foreshadowing in her past and through her antecedents that helped us to understand about Oprah. But the second reason, as you said, we did African American Lives a year ago, this coming February, and we looked at eight prominent African Americans, one of whom, of course, was Oprah. And we found more about Oprah's slave ancestors than we did any of our other subjects. And so we decided to expand on what we found about Oprah to tell her story in much more depth, because I wanted to educate particularly the African-American community, but the larger world, about the African-American genealogical past and African-American history through genealogy.
And it's interesting. Obviously, DNA and tracing roots back to Africa, that is that's an important and exciting part of this, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But a lot of the research you're doing is, well, you might call it historical foot soldiering. You go through newspapers, look at tombstones, that sort of thing.
That's right, archival work. But it's so much fun. First of all, I love it. I was trained as in history at Yale as an undergraduate, and then in English literature at Cambridge. And archival work, textual analysis, recovery work was a fundamental part of my education. And, you know, I did the recovery of Our Nig, the first novel by an African-American woman that was published, and then more recently, The Bond Woman's Narrative. That kind of research is fun, but people don't understand it. In fact, you know what? I think that we can use genealogy and genetics to revolutionize the way that we teach history and science, particularly for inner-city African-American school children. If I walk into a class in any inner-city school and I say, today's lesson is the double helix, DNA, and Watson and Crick, people are going to say, get out of town, right? We're not interested in that. But if I hold up a cotton swab and I say, if you scrape each of your cheeks 20 times, 6 weeks later, I'm going to be able to show you your maternal ancestor and what tribe she came from Africa. And in the intervening 6 weeks, we're going to study the science that makes that possible. Who wouldn't be riveted with that lesson plan? In addition, take historical research. If you tell the kids to go and find the newspaper accounts of the original speeches of Frederick Douglass in the 1850s, they're going to say, what are you talking about? But if you say, I want you to go home and interview your mother and father and get the names of their mother and father, where they were born, when they were born. And then we're going to take you to the National Archives or your local library and look at records from the federal census and look at estate division records and property tax records. And we are going to fill this blank family tree of yours each week, another rung, another branch, all the way back to 1870. And then we're going to show you how you can find the names sometimes of your anonymous slave ancestors. Man, kids get on fire to do historical research. And that is the subtext for why I'm doing these series. I want to I'm writing these now, new curricula for science and history for inner city schools. And I'm hoping that they will be adopted. And I'm hoping that they will reawaken in so many of our children who have lost it, reawaken the love of books, the love of knowledge. Because we were growing up in the 50s, we were a people of the book, too. The blackest thing you could be in the 50s was an educated man or an educated woman. And now far too many of our children have lost this understanding of the rich role of education in the African-American past.
People, though, tend to romanticize to some degree their family histories. I did a story years ago on Irish people looking for their roots, and everybody who came over thought that they were the successors of princes and poets, perhaps both, and very few thought that maybe they were the grandchildren or great-grandchildren of starving potato farmers.
Yeah, well, you know how that manifests itself in the African-American tradition. You would think that we would claim to be descendants from African chiefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we do claim to be descended from chiefs, but not African chiefs, Native American chiefs. One of the biggest myths in the African-American experience is that all of us have Native American ancestry, when in fact, very few of us do. And when you think about it, it would be illogical for most of us to have Native American ancestry. There were so many more African Americans and so few Native Americans. I mean, the average African American slave didn't even see a Native American. But I recently gave a lecture in Atlanta, and 600 people, mostly black, I asked the engineers to turn the lights up, and I said, everyone in here who has a Native American ancestor, raise your hand. The whole room raised their hand, and I said, maybe 5% of you people have Native American ancestors. That is it. And it's interesting that among our 8 subjects, well, 9 including me,
mm-hmm.
only Oprah and Chris Tucker had a significant amount of Native American ancestry. And it's logical for them because people forget that until the 1820s and 30s, Alabama, Mississippi were Native American territories, and the Native Americans were driven out. It was a huge, huge burst of the economy. I mean, it was a boom time. And so white settlers moved in with their slaves, and there were still remnants of Native Americans. So the Native American population and the African American slave population were contiguous. The same applies to early Virginia. But in most places, like in South Carolina on a big plantation, the average slave never even saw a Native American. It just didn't happen. And that is the myth of the African American experience. So I ask each of my subjects, do you have any Native American ancestry? They go, oh, yeah, my grandmother had high cheekbones and straight black hair. And then I revealed in the admixture test that they had 0 Native American ancestry. It was hilarious.
Let's get some listeners in on this conversation. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Afi. Afi's with us from Cleveland.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Hey, Afi.
Hi. I'm laughing at that Native American comment, but I do want to add one thing. I trace my Scruggs ancestry back to the Scruggs Plantation in Franklin County, Franklin, Tennessee, in Williamson County.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone back. I think the lady I found was my great great grandfather's mother.
Mm-hmm.
We did it totally through documents.
Now, was she white or black?
She was black.
She's black, okay. I didn't know. You could be either one. Could be either one now.
Could be, but she was a slave.
Could be a Native American. Who knows?
No,
yeah,
she wasn't.
That's right.
I do
right.
want to say 2 things. I think about the Native American, what we did find was that we had East African ancestry,
mm-hmm.
and that I think people forget there was an East African slave trade, and some of them did come over here.
Yes, that's true.
And then I think the other thing is just the emotional impact of seeing your ancestor with no last name
mm-hmm.
and a value, $500.
That's right.
Me knowing enough about history to realize that the price or his assessment told me more about his age and his skills than his name.
Absolutely.
In fact, talk about that just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the first point is about the East African slave trade. 2% of our slave ancestors came from Mozambique. You see, because of the a brilliant study, a database called the Transatlantic Slave Trade Database under the direction of Professor David Eltis at Emory, we now have a census of the slave trade. We know that approximately 12.5 million Africans were shipped to the New World between 1519 and 1867. But of that 12.5 million, only 500,000 came to the United States. And now we have a percentage breakdown from the ports all along the coast of Africa of where our slave ancestors came from, where these 500,000 Africans hailed from. And we know that 2% came from Mozambique, 27% came from Angola, 16% came from eastern Nigeria through the Bight of Benin. Approximately 50% came from the area of Senegal all the way down to Benin. So we can use this database and juxtapose it with the DNA results and begin to extrapolate to find where our ancestors came from. Because often in the DNA test, you get multiple exact matches. And you get multiple exact matches because the people, Africans migrated just like other people. And after wars, of course, women were the prizes, the booty of war, as the expression goes. So let's say the Yoruba people defeated the Igbo people. They would take Igbo women in tow. 500 years later, you think you're a Yoruba, but genetically, you're really an Igbo. So that's the first point.
Mm-hmm.
What was her second question?
The emotional impact of seeing your ancestors
with a value.
As
yes.
A
oh my goodness! I think the most moving part of tonight's program, to me, is when Oprah. I show Oprah the people most likely who were her great grandparents under slavery, mm-hmm. and she just cries. I mean, it's such a poignant moment, and they're listed there, as she says, with the cows and the chickens and the horses and the eggs. And these, it just says male, 23 years old. And that's her great-great-grandfather, Constantine Winfrey, who is really the hero of the series, without a doubt. Constantine Winfrey was the baddest brother in Mississippi. In 1870, he was illiterate. In 1876, the year that Reconstruction ends, he walks up to a white man named John Watson and says, I will pick 8 bales of cotton, clean cotton or lint cotton, in 2 years, and that weighs 3,200 pounds. To yield that much lint or clean cotton, you have to pick much more, like maybe twice as much, say 6,000 pounds of cotton. This is why while he's supporting a family of 8, being a farmer, a sharecropper. And I'm so audacious. And he said, in return to John Watson, you'll give me 80 acres of prime land with a stream going through it and some timber, which he could cut for profit. And we know that he was successful, because I hand Oprah on camera the land deed. John Watson dies, but his widow and son honor this crazy agreement. And in 1881, they turn over this 80-acre plot of land to Constantine Winfrey. And Constantine Winfrey, in the intervening years, has mastered the arts of reading and writing because he signs his name with a bold hand. You could look at every textbook ever written about African-American or American history, and you will not find a story like that when a slave goes up to an ex-Confederate, makes a deal, delivers the goods, and the ex-Confederate honors the deal. You want to know why Oprah Winfrey's Oprah Winfrey? Start with Constantine. Hmm. And in fact, in 1910, when the white community is shutting down the colored school, as we would have said then, Constantine Winfrey has the black school moved on to that 80 acres to protect it, educating the community.
Afi, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
And thank you for your time.
Bye-bye. We're talking with Henry Louis Gates, Jr., who narrates tonight's program on PBS, Oprah's Roots. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I did want to ask you before we leave today, you've been going through something over the past several months, leg extension. Why is this?
That's right. I had the whole time that you've known me, mm-hmm. and this is not the first time we've been together on this program.
Not.
Since I was 25, I've had a 2.5-inch difference between the lengths of my legs. I had a misdiagnosed common hip condition when I was 14 in the hills of West Virginia, and there were various complications, and I had 3 hip replacements, and that left my right leg 2.5 inches shorter. And I went to the hospital for special surgery in New York to fix a broken ankle. And they said, well, we can fix your broken ankle and we can lengthen your leg and we can make your legs more or less equal. And so I had 5 operations between December 8th, a year ago, and this December 12th. This December 12th, I had a 4.5-hour operation a month ago or so. And they lengthened my leg. They broke it on December 8th last year and pulled it apart 1 millimeter a day for 3 months, and then it took 6 months for it to fill in. It's called limb lengthening, and anyone who's interested in this should look at limblengthening.com on the internet. Dr. Robert Rosbrook and Dr. Svetlana Elizarov, And now I am wearing more or less normal shoes. My leg has grown 2 inches in 12 months.
Unbelievable. Can I, if I could use a word from the vernacular, ow!
Yeah, it hurt. I lost about 15 pounds. People say, you look great. How'd you lose the weight? I said, well, it's called the BRAC diet, the pain diet. But yeah, it was a tough year. But it was a good year, and I feel, I feel like a new person. It's quite amazing.
It's interesting. As a child, I've read something you wrote. You were raised to be a doctor.
That's right. I was raised to be a doctor. My mama, God rest her soul, Pauline Augusta Coleman Gates, wanted two doctors. My brother, Dr. Paul Gates, is the chief of oral surgery at Bronx Lebanon Hospital. And there's little old Skippy Gates, the baby, as my mother would say, bringing up the rear. But when I got my PhD from Cambridge, she used to say, well, you're a doctor anyway, just
sort
a different
of a
kind
doctor.
Of doctor.
Sort of a doctor. Anyway, just by the unbelievable coincidence, I used to work as an orderly as a kid in high school at the Hospital for Special Surgery.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's the best boned hospital in the United States.
You're not going to get an argument from me.
No, it's a good thing.
Henry Louis Gates, Jr., thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate your time today, and good luck with your leg.
Thank you, brother. See you soon.
Henry Louis Gates, the W.E.B. Du Bois Professor of the Humanities and Director of the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for American and African American Research at Harvard University. He narrates tonight's special Oprah's Roots to be broadcast on many PBS stations and joined us today from our bureau in New York with two legs of roughly the same length. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington.